Good evening.
Good evening.
We are beginning a new topic tonight. It is going to slightly relate to our Mishnah, but as we will see, it's going to throw us into new territory. And it's a short topic, but it's one that is made interesting by the Rambam. It's definitely worth exploring. So, the first Mishnah, as we've seen, records a machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, regarding procedure in cases where you are undergoing the process of Beis Din Shel Zavlav, Zabor Loechem, Zabor Loechem. Everybody agrees that you have two people who have some kind of monetary conflict, or dispute, and they want to create a Beis Din. Everybody agrees that Reuven appoints one judge, and Shimon appoints one judge. That gives you your first two judges. But as we know from the very first Mishnah, in Maseches Sanhedrin, and as our Mishnah repeats, Dinei Momonos B'Shlosha, you need three to serve on your Beis Din. And we saw a dispute regarding the proper procedure for appointing the third of those judges. Rabbi Meir said that the third judge is appointed by the two Ba'alei Dinim. Reuven and Shimon together collaborate, and they find something that they can agree on, or someone that they can agree on, and they together appoint a third judge. According to the Chachamim, it is not the two Ba'alei Dinim, it is not Reuven and Shimon who come together to appoint the third judge, but it is rather their chosen judges who together appoint the third judge. And the Gemara, on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, attempts to explain what that machlokas is all about. So I quoted in Source 1, or if you have Gemara, you can see it in the Gemara, inside in the Gemara. The Gemara says as follows, the Chachamim say that it is the two judges who together appoint the third judge. And the Gemara makes the following suggestion. Name a bidur of Yehuda Amarav Kamiflugi. Let us suggest that this Machlokas Tanaim recorded in the Mishnah is actually a Machlokas about a principle that we heard from Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav. To Amar Rav Yehuda Amarav, because Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav, Ein ha'edim chosmen al hashtar, elo imken yod in mi chosem imahem. Witnesses may not sign on a document unless they know who is signing with them. Rabbi Meir lesle de Rav Yehuda Amarav. Let us suggest that Rabbi Meir does not agree with this principle of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. Rabbanan is lehu de Rav Yehuda Amarav. And the Rabbanan agree with this principle of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. Now, what is this suggestion of the Gemara? Obviously, our Mishnah is not dealing with witnesses who are signing on a shtar. It's dealing with tayonim who are sitting down with others to join them in a beis din. What the Gemara seems to be implying, what seems clear from the Gemara, is that we're suggesting that the same considerations that would apply to a witness who is signing his name on a document with another witness, those same considerations would apply to judges who are joining together to sit down on a beis din. And Rabbi Yehuda Amarav advises that you know whom you are, with whom you are signing or with whom you are sitting in the context of a beis din before you actually commit to putting your signature down or to sitting on a beis din. Now, what is the reasoning for Rabbi Yehuda Amarav? That's something that we're going to have to explore. But the Gemara is now suggesting that the Chachamim are sensitive to this consideration of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, and therefore they say that it should be the judges themselves who decide who they will be sitting on a court with, because after all, again, they have to know who they're sitting with. Rabbi Meir, by contrast, does not hold the review of the Marav and says that it is at the discretion of the Ba'alei Dinim to choose the third judge, and we don't have to take into account the opinion of the two judges. That's the suggestion of the Gemara, but the Gemara very quickly rejects it. Second line, lo, the Gemara says, no, that's not really what's going on. Tekuli alma is lehu de Rav Yehuda Amarav. Really, everybody agrees with the Rav Yehuda Amarav that you do need to know with whom you are signing. V'das adayonin kuli alma lo pligi deveinan. The Gemara suggests that really even Rabbi Meir would agree that you need the consent of the judges when you are deciding who the third judge is that they will be sitting with. Ki pligi das ba'alei dinin, what are they arguing about? They are arguing about whether or not, in addition to the consent of the judges, you also need the consent of the ba'alei dinin. Rabbi Meir savar das ba'alei dinin nami be'inan. Rabbi Meir holds that you also need the das of the ba'alei dinin. For Rabbanan savri das adayanan be'inan, Da'as ba'alei dinin lo be'inan. The Rabbanan say that you only need the consent of the judges, presumably because of the consideration of Rav Yehuda Amarav. You do not need the consent of the litigants, of the ba'alei dinin.
Either you are going to talk about this anyway, or not, and then that's why I'm bringing it up. But how does this machloket like, depend, or why was it assumed that it might depend on the, on this, on it, on the question of Ein Ha'id and Chosmer al Hashter?
Okay, so the Gemara, we'll have to, again, we will get into the reasoning behind Chosmer al Hashter.
Right. What's clear
is that whatever the consideration of Chosmer al Hashter is, the Gemara is initially assuming that the same consideration would apply to Yoshvin Bedin. Right.
But
now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that initially the Gemara thinks the question is, whose consent do you need? Do you only exclusively need the consent of the judges, or do you need the consent of the Ba'alei Din? And the Gemara is saying that if Rabbi Meir holds that you don't need the consent of the judges, then clearly he does not hold of this principle of Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Because Rabbi Yehuda Marav is saying that the judges need to know who they're sitting with.
But the consent of, it's not, the question I thought was, maybe I'm misremembering Mara, but I thought the question was whether the judges can pick another judge without the choice, without the consent of the litigants, not whether the litigants can. Meaning, I thought it was like the litigants can pick any three judges. No, they don't have to.
That was subject to the machlokes in Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, but the exact machlokes is being fleshed out by the Gemara here. In other words, as follows. All we know is that Reuven picks one, Shimon picks one. That, there's no dispute. The question is, what is procedure for choosing the third, right? So, all we know is that Rabbi Meir said that the Ba'alei Dinim choose the third, the litigants choose the third, and the Chachamim said that it's the Dayanim, the judges who choose the third.
Okay? Wait, but, okay, yeah.
Now, within each case, you could have, within Rabbi Meir, you could have said, yeah, it's true that the litigants choose the judge, but you still need the consent of the judges. Or within the Chachamim, you could have said, yeah, it's true that the judges choose the third, but you still need the consent of the litigants.
Okay. I thought that was more of...
Which one?
The latter, meaning that it was obvious that you do not need consent of the litigants, but you do need consent of the judge.
And how would you understand Rabbi Meir, who says that the litigants choose the third judge?
I thought it was obvious that the litigants are allowed to choose. If the litigants started out by saying, you know, you, we both agree we want the three of you on the Beit Din, that everyone would agree that that was okay. But apparently...
No, the Chachamim say they just choose the first two, and it's the judges who choose the third.
Saying that, so I thought that that was, perhaps erroneously, I thought that that was... in a case where the litigants were unable to decide on a third judge, and so as a way of, you know...
I mean, in the Mishnah itself, there's no indication of that. We did see that some preferred the position of the Chachamim, because if they couldn't agree about a judge in the first place, why would the litigants be able to agree about another judge? People did say that. As a svara for the Chachamim, or behind why we would hold like the Chachamim.
But
in the Mishnah itself, there's no indication that it's only in an... On the contrary, it sounds like that is the procedure l'chatchila, not that it's only in the event that they cannot agree.
Interesting. Okay.
Just from a practical perspective, was there like a pool of judges that they were able to choose from?
So, as we will see tonight, and as we've spoken about in the past, there was certainly in Zmanei HaMikdash, there was a structured hierarchy of what they did, right? The Gemara Makos says, "B'chol pelach u'pelach, b'chol ir v'ir." In every city, in every province, whatever these terms mean, perhaps every shevet, the Rambam leaves out shevet, but and then working up to the Sanhedrin HaGadol in Yerushalayim, you had this kind of formal structure of Batei Din. Now, ideally, they'd be able to just agree, let's go to the local Beis Din. In the past weeks, we've spoken about what happens if one wants to go to the local Beis Din and one wants to go to a higher level Beis Din somewhere else. This is a case where they really can't agree on any formal Beis Din. Now, obviously, that hierarchy and structure in and of itself de facto creates a pool of Dayanim. So it leaves them plenty of people to choose from. But
they also have to agree to take the case, right?
Well, agreeing to take the case... Who, the Dayanim themselves?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. We'll talk about that.
They're not paid to do that.
Compensation, though, I mean, like, I don't know if they can be paid and things like that. That's going to be a separate question. However they work that out, I don't know. But there certainly are people to choose from.
Can can I ask a follow-up question on Mayo? So the assumed equivalence between the machloket in our Gemara or in our Mishnah and in Chochmah al Shtar, I assume then is that if the two Dayanim don't get to pick the third Dayan, then they, you know, they didn't consent to a third Dayan, and that is somehow equivalent to Eidim being unaware of each other, not just that they didn't, meaning like if, you know, you ask me and some other guy to be Eidim on your ksuva, and we don't know each other, and so that's different than, like, you asked us, and, like, I've never met you before in my life, and I don't really like you, but, like, I'll be willing to.
So
So it sounds like there's an equivalence between not knowing the other person and not consenting to the other person. And that's odd, especially because,
okay,
in Zablah, you don't consent to at least one person, for sure.
Okay, you're gonna, what you just said got ahead of us in at least two respects.
Okay.
The distinction between not knowing and not consenting is an important one, which we'll get back to, because there's ambiguity in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Rambam, and we'll talk about that. The second point about not consenting to the second person, that's not necessarily true, right? Again, I, as a Dayan, I don't necessarily have any problem with sitting with the Dayan that's chosen by the other litigant. They have issues between the two of them. That doesn't mean that we Dayanim have issues between us.
Right.
But for the same reasoning,
the two of us Dayanim don't mind that this third Dayan who was chosen by the litigants, like, just because.
No. I'm not saying that we definitively do not have any issues. I'm just saying it's possible that we don't have any issues. Before you were saying, oh, you definitely have an issue with at least one other Dayan.
Oh, well, okay, fine. I mean that, you're right, I said that, I mean that, like, we definitely did not consent to the, at least one other Dayan.
Not so clear. So that's, well, again,
okay,
so we'll see two Dayos on the run on that topic,
okay.
But we'll get back to that. Okay, fine. Gufa, there's three lines up from the bottom of source one. Amar of Yehuda Amarav, Ina Eidim Chos Ben Al Ashtar V'chulei, Ela Im Ken Yodim Yichos Mimahem, as we saw in the Gemara. Tanya Nami Hachi, the Gemara says, two lines up. We also saw this in a Braisa. Kachayu Nikiye Hada'as Shebi Yushalayim Osin. This was the practice of the Nikiye Hada'as, those who were pure in their thoughts, in their intellect. I don't know how exactly you translate Nikiye Hada'as. Pure souls, something to that effect. This is what they would do.
That means just they didn't let emotions get in the way.
I don't know, maybe it depends on your perspective on, depends if you're a chassid or a litvak.
Like Mr.
Spock. But maybe.
They were good dudes.
This is what these holy people in Yerushalayim would do. Lohayu chosmin al ashtar ela imken yodin mi chose mimahen. They would not sign on document unless they knew who was signing with them. Lohayu yoshvin badin ela imken yodin mi yoshe mimahen. Okay, and here we have the parallel drawn more explicitly. They would not sit on a beis din unless they knew who was sitting with them. And they would not enter a festive meal unless they knew, or a meal in general, unless they knew who was eating.
So does this mean, like, I need to actually, like, if, like, how would you not know who the other Dayanim are? Does that mean you're not familiar with the other Dayanim? Or does that mean, like, they're in separate rooms somehow,
let's hold off on that question. That's going to be
it's
a critical. It's going to be a critical question. But we'll have to examine it.
This is going to be the end of Shul Podbox. It's awful.
Emkin Yodin Mi Meisavi Mahem.
Yeah. What do you call it? Like singles. Like, the whole point is you're supposed to be new.
Right, exactly. So a couple of points on that. Number one, obviously, there are three things that are quoted in the Braisa. They won't sign on a shtar, they won't sit on a beis din, and they won't go to a suda. If we had to play the Sesame Street, one of these things is not like the other's game, right? Clearly, suda stands out. The other two...
I agree. I mean, in that respect, yes.
The other two are formal legal proceedings, and Seuda is something that people do. It's a meal. It's also noteworthy that who is doing this? The Nekei Hada'asha B'Yerushalayim. Certain holy people are having this practice, okay? That's something to note as well. So before we get into any of the questions that Jerry was raising, let's just assess this principle of Eina Idim Chosmen Al-Ashar before we even get into the extension to the Beis Din and the Nekei Hadas, all the stuff that's relevant to our Gemara. Let's just assess for a moment the principle of Eina Idim Chosmen Al-Ashar La'im Kino Mi'chosmi Mayim. Rav, as quoted by Rabbi Yehuda, holds that you are not to sign on a document unless you know who is signing with you. Now the Rishonim, a number of Rishonim, challenged this ruling of Rav Yehuda Marav based on a Gemara in Maseches Gittin. It appears in Source 2. So we're getting Daf Yudam Aleph, or the Mishnah that's quoted on Gittin Daf Yudam Aleph. Kol gat sheyesh alav eid kuti, puzzle. Any document that has a kuti signed onto it, we know that kutim were these converts, and there's some debate in Chazal as to what their status was. Were they true converts? Did they only convert because of certain phenomena that were going on? They were getting killed by lions. So there's some ambiguous status as to whether or not they are actually bona fide Jews. So the Mishnah says that if you have a document that has a witness who is a kuti signed on it, it is disqualified, it is not kosher. Chutz migitei nashim v'shechurei avad. The only exception to that is a get, or a shtar shechur, or a get shechur, a document that is used to free a slave. Those documents are kosher, are ksherim, even if you have a kuti who signed on it. And there was a story with Rabbi Gamliel where indeed he pronounced kosher a get that had an eid kuti signed on it, that had a kuti witness signed on it, onto it. Gemara. So the Gemara spends a while trying to figure out who this ruling is in line with. And then the Gemara eventually asks, Alama, Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo akshiru bo ela eid echad kuti bilvat. Rabbi Elazar qualifies the Mishnah and says, it's only kasher if one of the witnesses was an eid kuti, if both of them are eidim kutim, then it is pasul. He was the Olam Rabbi Elazar. Really, Rabbi Elazar is correct. And again, it's going according to Rabbi Elazar. Ukegon dechasim Yisrael lebesof. What is the case in which a get is kosher with an eid kuti? If the first signature was the kuti signature, and the second signature was the Yisrael, the Jew's signature. Why is that kosher? The Gemara explains, the ilav de kuti chaver hava lo machtim le mikameh. If it weren't for the fact that this particular, if it weren't for the fact that the Jewish signator, the Jewish witness, if it weren't for the fact that he knew that this kuti is indeed an adam kasher, somebody who is, again, qualifies for proper edus, he would never have signed on the shtar. When his signature is second, and he saw the first signature, and he nonetheless chooses to sign, that indicates for us that indeed that a kuti is kasher. It's as if he's signing off not only on the get itself, but he's signing off on the qualifications of the witness who precedes him, on the document. The Gemara asks, "Ihachi, afilu she'arshtar znami." If that's the case, if the whole svara is that when the Jew signs afterwards, he's signing off on the qualifications of the first witness, he is saying that he is indeed an adam kasher, then why is it specifically by get? Why is it specifically by shtar shechor? It should be any shtar. That logic applies equally to any shtar where a kuti and then a Jew is signed. So the Gemara says, Ela Amrinan, so what do we say about Moshtaros? Rav Chashavak Leman de Kashish Mine, that he left room. What happened? Why is it that this Jew signed second? We're concerned that the following occurred. He was signing off on the shtar. He thought that the other person signing on the shtar was a great Adam Gadol, a great, Torah figure. So he deliberately signed his name with space on top, so that the other person would be able to sign first, as a way to give respect to this great Torah figure who's going to be signing off on the shtar as well. So he left space, and what happened? In the end, this great Torah personality was not able to sign on the shtar, and who signed instead? It was Eid Kuti. So just because his name happens to be positioned second on the shtar does not necessarily indicate that he is indeed signing off on the qualifications, righteousness, kashrus, of the aid kuti who came before him. It is quite conceivable that he actually signed first. He simply left a little bit of space, and the aid kuti signed above his name. That is our concern by other shtaros. So the Gemara asks, if that's a real concern, so, again, you haven't explained to me what the difference is between a get and other shtaros. If we are indeed concerned that he signed his name with a little bit of space and the eid kuti signed above him, then that's a concern that should apply equally to kitin. So why is a get kasher? So Amar Papa. Papa says, Zosomeres. Eide ha get ein chos bin ze below ze. When it comes to witnesses on a get, they must sign in front of one another. My taima, Amar Ravashi gzera mishum kulchem. So Ravashi explains it's a gzera because of a case of kulchem. There are certain cases where a man can say, I want to, a man says he wants to give his wife a get. Sorry. But he wants all 10 of the people assembled in the room to sign on the get. And the halacha says that if only 2 of them sign, even though the standard number, the standards that we have for Eidos only require 2 witnesses, generally speaking, in this particular instance where he specifies that he wants everybody to sign, it is not a get kasher if only 2 of them sign, and you actually need the signatures of all of them. So our Papa says, in that case, you want everybody to sign together to make sure that indeed everybody is signing on it. And Xera, because of that case, the witnesses always sign together. So in the case of a get, indeed it's true. He knows who he's signing with. He knows the Eid Kuti that he is signing with. And if he still signs nonetheless, that is a sign that he at least renders this Eid Kuti in Eid Kasha. In the case of other shtaros, where they are not signing in front of one another, we do indeed have a legitimate concern that he has no idea who this Eid Kuti is, and he's not at all signing off on the qualifications of this Eid Kuti. He just signed, and the Eid Kuti signed above. Fine. That's the Gemara in Gittin. Now, why does that Gemara in Gittin pose an obvious problem for us? The Gemara seems to be saying that specifically by what? Specifically by a get, the witnesses must be present for their respective signatures. Specifically by a get, he has to know that the Eid Kuti that he is signing with is an Eid Kasher. By Sha'ar Shtaros, he has no idea who he's signing with. The Eid Kuti could have just signed on the Shtar, he had no idea who he was. He certainly isn't testifying or attesting to the qualifications and Kasheros of the witness who signed with him. And this bothers a number of the Rishonim here. Which is it? Do we say Eina Idim Chosman Al Ashtar Ela Imken Yodim Michosim Mikvahim? That's the case. Then indeed, he should be testifying that the Eid Kuti is qualified. Or do we say no? That's only true by Gittin, by other Shtaros. You have no idea. It's possible that he knows who he is. It's possible that he has no idea who he is, and therefore we can't rely on this. That's a question that bothers the Rishon. So if you look at verse 3, the question is addressed by the Tosfos HaRash. Eina Idim Chosman Al Ashtar Ela Imken Yodim Michosim Mikvahim. We have a problem from something that we learned in a Mishnah in the first parak of Gittin. Kol haget sheyeshalav eid kuti, pasul, chutz migidei nashim v'shechurei avadim. Any get that has an eid kuti on it is pasul, as we just saw a moment ago, except for gidei nashim, except for a get, and a shtar shechur, freeing an eved. Umifareish, kigon dechasim Yisrael lebesof. And the Gemara explains that it's specifically a case where the Jew is signing afterwards. Because if it weren't for the fact that the Kuti is actually qualified, he wouldn't have signed it. Exactly what we just saw. But by Shar Shtaros, where they don't necessarily know who is signing with them, it's fine. So underline. The answer of the Rosh is as follows. The Shar Shtaros de lo mifsili bahachi ichas mi ze below ze. What is the Rush's answer? The Rush says, look, everybody agrees to what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav is saying, that a witness must know with whom he is signing before he puts a signature down. However, let's say he failed to live up to his duties as a witness. And he didn't do that. He didn't do his due diligence. He didn't check who he's signing with. Is the Shtar puzzle as a result of that? No. Shtar still kosher. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav didn't say that, if you didn't know who you're signing with, then we have to rip up the entire shtar, irrespective of whether or not the second witness is kosher. He simply said that a witness has an obligation to do his due diligence. If he fails to, that's his problem. But it doesn't mean that the shtar itself is possible. Whereas, in the case of a get, if they don't sign in front of one another, Rav Papa is telling us that there is a gzera, that the get itself is what we would call a get pasul. It is not going to work. So, that's a very logical distinction. The Rush is saying that in the case of a get, or let's say in the case of other shtaros, as much as we would like for everybody to do their due diligence, there may be certain circumstances where they do not, and we have to be concerned about those cases where a witness does indeed neglect to do his due diligence, and there's an Eid Kuti who signs it. Okay? That's the approach of the Rush. In the case of get, it ruins the shtar entirely. In the case of other shtaros, it's something that the witnesses should be doing, but if they fail to do it, it does not disqualify the shtar. The same issue is raised by the Chidush HaRan in source number 4. We don't have to read through the entire question again. That's the first paragraph, is just a reiteration of the question. Let's take a look at the Ikal HaMeimar. The Ran offers two answers. The Ikal HaMeimar, and one could answer, since there is no requirement that they literally sign in front of one another, we're concerned that perhaps he thought that somebody kosher was going to sign with him, but in the end, that's not what occurred. In other words, the Ran is drawing another very practical distinction between the two cases, similar to the Rush, but a little bit different. What the Ran is saying is as follows. What did Rav Yehuda Amar Rav say about most sharos? He said that you have to know with whom you are signing, right? Did he say that you have to sign in the same room as that person? No, he never said that you have to be there and you must sign together. You just have to know with whom you're signing. When it comes to a get, you actually have to be signing together in the same room at the same table, right? So there's a concern. Perhaps, in the case of a get, I certainly know who I'm signing with, because, indeed, we are signing together. In the case of other shtaros, I may think I know who I'm going to be signing with. They tell me, oh, you're the first witness, and then we're going to take your shtar, and we're going to take it to another town, and the second witness is going to be Plony, who is from that town, who I know to be a perfectly good kosher witness. That's what they told me. That they told me he's going to be the second witness. So I put my signature down under that assumption, and they take it. And instead, who do they bring in? An Eid Kuti, who signs on it instead. So there's a concern. The Ran is saying that, again, even if he does his due diligence, perhaps things won't work out the way he anticipated. In the case of a get, you don't have that problem because they're signing right in front of each other. In the case of other shtaros, you do. So the first answer in the Ran and the Rush.
Sorry, does a get have to be signed by a judge, or it can be... It's signed by anybody, right?
Two kosher witnesses.
Okay.
Those are the standards for a get. Like all shtaros. Like all
documents.
All halakhic documents need to be signed by two witnesses.
Just because they're signing in the same room doesn't mean they know anything about their qualifications, right?
The assumption is, if you're signing in the room with somebody else, you're going to... You're 100% right, and just a... theoretical construct
right,
sense.
You'll find out.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. If you're signing together with someone, you'll know. Well, in other words, what the Ran is saying is as follows. The Ran is saying is that one across the board has an obligation to find out who he's signing with. By a get, there's the additional requirement that you sign it together. So, in other words, by a get, not only have you inquired as to who you're signing with, you have the additional advantage that you're able to see it through. You're able to see not just the theory, you're able to see the implementation. You see the actual signing. Whereas in other cases, you do your due diligence, but you don't see the implementation, and perhaps something will go wrong in the implementation such that the person who you thought is going to sign is not going to. So the Rush and the Ran both, and the first answer of the Ran, both argue that Rav Yehuda Amar Rav is stating a halacha. It's a unanimous halacha. We don't have a Gemara that disagrees. But there are concerns. For the Rush, there's a concern that perhaps some people will neglect to do their due diligence. For the first answer in the Ran, there's a concern that they will do their due diligence, but something will go wrong in terms of the execution. Then we come to the second answer in the Chidush HaRan. And this is a critical answer. Inami, again, the word inami is underlined, two lines up from the bottom in source 4. Hovel uvishar shtaros, ein tzarech sheyedu michos emimahem, elo mishum nekios hadas. Because by other shtaros, it's not a bona fide halacha that you have to know with whom you're signing. Rather, it's something that you do because of Nikios Hadas. What is he obviously playing on? He's playing on the language of the Braisa, which says, Kachayu Nikie Hadash Abi Yerushalayim Mosim. We have all sorts of things that the Gemara tells us that these holy people would do. The Gemara in Brachos tells us about these Chasidim would spend an hour before davening and an hour after davening. Three times a day, they'd spend 9 hours, just 6 hours, sorry, just contemplating. And then the Gemara says they'd spend an additional 3 hours on each tefillah. So Mincha would take an hour and Maariv would take an hour. They would spend 9 hours a day on their prayers. Does that mean there's an obligation to spend an hour meditating before prayer and an hour afterwards, trying to, I don't know, make sense of the experience and integrate it into your life? No, there's no obligation to do that. The Gemara all the time is describing what various holy people did in terms of their own practices of midas chasidus, what we usually call, some kind of litnim mishuras adin, but it's not an actual halacha. So this second answer in the round is asserting that what? This whole thing of Rav Yehuda Merav is not a halacha at all. What is it? It's something that one should do as a kind of mitos chasidus, something that holy people do. It's a good piece of advice. It's valuable spiritual advice, perhaps valuable practical, pragmatic advice, as we'll see in a moment. But it's not an actual halacha. So again, just to read the answer again. Since by other shtaros, the only reason why you need to know with whom you're signing is because of this extra level of mitos chasidus, you can't say that the kuti is definitively possible, because not everybody is these super holy people like the Nekiyah Hadash B'Yerushalayim, and not everybody is going to be doing this. So what we seem to have is a basic machlokes. It's two deos in the run, and the rush seems to, the Tosza rush at least, seems to be going in one particular direction as well, as to whether B'Yehuda Merav is a halacha, or just a kind of Eitza Tova / Midas Chasidus. According to the implication of the Tosafot Rashi and the first answer in the Chiddush Aran, this is a halacha. One must do so. How do you deal with the Gemara in Gittin? We have concerns, either that he neglected his obligation or that the execution didn't come through the way he anticipated. According to the second answer in the Ran, however, this is not a halacha at all. It's a midas chasidus. It's a good piece of advice, but it's not a bona fide halachic obligation. Just something to be aware of. Now, as it happens, and this is one of a couple of places that I've seen this, the tshuva of the Rush, if you look in source 5, Shot Rush Klal Nun Tes, gives the opposite impression of the Tosafot Rush. Raises interesting methodological questions, like what was the relationship between the Tosafot Rush and his tshuvos. Tosafot Rush very often is based on the Tosafot Shantz, as Urbach pointed out, very often based on the Tosafot Shantz. So he very often throws in his own analysis, but you have to wonder whether everything that's included in the Tosafot Rashi is indeed his personal conviction and conclusion. And if you look over here, source number 5, he deals with the same question from the Gemara in Gittin, in the Tshuva, and here he gives the answer that's similar to the second answer of the Ran. Source 5, Lodami Lahada Amar of Yehuda. The whole notion that we had in Gittin about signing when one is not in front of the other is not similar to Rabbi Yehuda. What did Rabbi Yehuda say? Because there, the Rush says, Eino ki im eitza tova kamashmalan. There, it is only a piece of sound advice. The Amar Bazar Hachi, as the Gemara continues to say, and it was specifically, again, everybody's highlighting, hammering home, this Nekiyei Hadas point. It was specifically the Nekiyei Hadas of Yerushalayim who would do this. Aval hamon ha'am ein makbidin. But most people were not makbid on this.
Interesting is that it is not actually technically the exact lashon of the Gemara that we have, because our Gemara essentially says kachay, meaning it doesn't say v'chein hayu. It doesn't connect it. It doesn't connect it within the statement itself. It suggests that there's this other statement. Our Gemara, our person of Gemara at least, is that there's this other statement, and Gemara is saying that these two statements.
Well, comport, right,
but.
Right,
but
by relating Rav Yehuda to the Braisa,
right, the Gemara.
Well,
might
no,
be,
well, no, not. That's not necessarily true. I disagree, actually, because the Braisa itself says Kachayu Nekiyah Hadash B'Yerushalayim Osim. The first thing on the list is They would only be Chosei Manashtar if they knew who was signing with them.
Right.
So there, the implication of the Braisa itself, if you play up the language of Kachayu Nikiyah Hadasha B'Yushalayim Osim, is that indeed, like the Rosh says, this is not something that the Hamon Ha'am would do. It's something that specifically the Nikiyah Hadas would do.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that for, if you read the Gemara, you could come away with the impression that there are two different positions. There is Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, who holds that there's a halacha that and then there's also this Braita that suggests
so Rav is disagreeing with. Then you get into
and the Gemara Tana, is the Gemara
you get
is
into Tana Amora questions, right?
Yeah.
Rav is disagreeing with the Braita, which okay. Or he's not disagreeing with the Braisa, but you're saying, no, maybe Rav instituted a Chiv Rabbanan to do this himself.
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
The Gemara is suggesting that the two might be related, and that, but although this is not incontrovertibly so, but the Gemara seems to be saying that this Braisa is agreeing with Rav Yehuda Amarav, and thus telling you that Rav Yehuda Amarav also sees this as a value statement rather than a strict halacha. The way that the Rosh is quoting it, it says v'chein hayunikiyah, meaning that the text of the Braita itself, or that it is telling you that it means.
I totally get what you're saying. The proof that the Rosh adduces emerges from the Gemara's linkage between the Braita and Rav Yehuda Amarav.
Right.
But he's quoting, after all, is quoting the Gemara, right? So the fact the Gemara links them would seem to imply that indeed it is only an Eitzot. Okay. Fine. That is the most basic question. I always want to know something to Oraisa and to Rabbanan. Right here is the question of whether it's a halacha at all. Now we get into the question of the reason for it. And I don't know if we're going to have time to get into the exciting part of the sugya. Let's at least document some issues, and maybe we'll get a chance to at least begin our analysis of the Rambam. Because this is a pretty straightforward sugya until you look at the Rambam. It really throws everything into a... raises some issues. So one question is, what is the whole reason behind this halacha? Once we know, we have that question on the books, as to this machlokes rishonim, as whether it's a halacha or just an etzah tova, what is the reason for it? So if you look at verse 6, Rashi begins to help us out. El imken yodin michosei mimahem. They would know who's signing with them. Shema yachsimu imahem eid echad pasal, because maybe one eid echad pasal would sign with them. Umevatal eidus kulam, and would destroy the entire testimony on the basis of the principle of Nimsa Echad Meham Karav Apostle, either Shabbat Mitzvah Shabbat Kula. You have a big question as to how, to what degree that principle applies to Shtaros. This is one of the Gemaras that comes up in that context, right? Because Rashi says, Mevatel Eidos Kulam, you could have just said, oh, it's only in a case where there are two witnesses, right? There's nothing in the Gemara that indicates there are more than two witnesses. The implication of Rashi is that it is. But anyway, we don't have to get into that now. Now, if you just had those words, Shema Yaksimu Imam Eidachad Pasul Mevatel Eidos Kulam, you could have interpreted that in different ways, right? It could have been, don't sign on a shtar if the shtar itself is going to be puzzle. In other words, when you sign on a shtar, not only are you attesting to the truth of what is described in the shtar, you are, in a sense, attesting to the kashrus of the shtar as well. And that relates to much broader sugyas in the first parak of Ksubos, second parak of Ksubos, of all these cases where somebody claims that a shtar is pasul. And there are various cases where even the witnesses themselves say that a shtar was pasul. We were ketanim when we signed on it, we were psulim, we were anusim, and the Gemara says that it doesn't work. The shtar, in effect, defends its own kashrus. Now that works is a large discussion. The Rav had many famous shiurim on shtaros, Rav Chaim had a number of important pieces on shtaros in both in the Sefer and in the stencil. So that's like a much larger discussion. But you could have said that, in effect, what Rashi is saying is that you're not only testifying as to the events that occurred, but you are responsible for the kashrus of the shtar as well. Don't sign on shtar if it is going to be a shtar puzzle that somebody is going to use to unlawfully extort money from somebody else. But Rashi doesn't end there, and he adds three words. But he doesn't stop there, he adds three words. He says, Mevatel eidos kulam, benimtzu elu boshin. And it turns out, you're going to be embarrassed. You're going to be embarrassed. Now that would clearly seem to be like an Eitz HaTov.
I assume this is on the second time that the Gemara quotes this, meaning on
the Kiyah Dash of Yerushalayim. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look at the Dibur Masv. Al Emkin Yodin Michal
Zimimah.
Right, okay.
Right, so... Because that could have been either one, but yes. I think.
No, correct. You're right, you're right.
But I assume it is the second one.
True, yeah, yeah. I think it is. But look at another one. Ve'ein nechnas in l'suda. Again. She'genai hu l'talmidei chachamim leishav eitz al ama aretz b'suda. It's a genai for a talmud chacham to sit next to an ama aretz at a meal. Now again, that Rashi in and of itself could have been interpreted as a halacha. There are certain things that are genai and are therefore prohibited. Talmud chacham has to abide by certain standards of cleanliness, certain standards of dress, right? The Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah describes the way a Talmud Chacham has to conduct himself. He can't walk around in a stained shirt. Not that I'm a Talmud Chacham, I'm just checking. But, you know, what?
Don't tell you.
Yeah. You can't walk around in ripped clothing. You know, Yeshiva Bachrim, take those Rambams to heart. But, so those are halachas, right? It's a g'day for Talmidei Chachamim, and as a Talmud Chacham, as a representative of Torah, has to conduct himself in a certain way. So that could have been a halacha as well. In light of the first Rashi, it definitely seems for Rashi like this is a kind of Eitzah Tova, so that you don't want to protect yourself, you don't want to be embarrassed. Okay. The Bach, and Nagaz HaBach, flips that a little bit, kind of works with the g'day theme, but puts an interesting twist on it to turn it into a halacha. Nira be'enai sor 7. Nira be'enai svara achrina. I think you can offer an alternative approach. She'ilu hayu ba'alei dinin borerin. If the litigants would choose the third judge, shema lo yehei hagun, perhaps he would not be fitting or appropriate. Ve'lo yichyu hashnayim yicholin lomar ein anu yoshvin imze. They would not be able to say, we're not sitting with him. Why? L'fisha mevayshin oso. Because then, who would be embarrassed? It's not a concern that, oh, you'll sit down and you'll be embarrassed because you'll be sitting with an Amma Aretz. The concern is that if we don't enable, empower the judges to choose the third judge, then they'll be put in an awkward situation where the Ba'al Edinim, the litigants, choose somebody who they feel is inappropriate, and they can't withdraw themselves from the case because they'll publicly embarrass him. So in order to remove that issue, we try to forfend that issue, we try to get the judges themselves to select the third judge.
I feel like the Bach definitely went through this.
What?
I feel like the Bach definitely went through this. I don't know, just you.
You're saying psychologically?
No. I mean, like...
You're saying he was in a position where he had to distance himself.
Yeah, I feel like just the way, like, in order to have thought of this, you have to... I mean, not that it's like a crazy out there idea, but like, I don't know.
It's definitely conceivable. I mean, we've all had awkward social encounters, you know, in one similar way or another. Now, it's interesting that the Bach is specifically describing the case of Zebor and Loecha. I don't know if his Svara would actually work in the case of Eina Edim Chosman al Ashtar, right? Or the concern is that if the other person signed already and then they ask you, you're going to embarrass him by refusing to sign. I guess that's what the Bach would say. So this is a halacha. Right? It is still about busha, but it's not about your personal busha, it's about potentially embarrassing somebody else. Aval k'shebor lo ze'echad, when it's zebor lo echad, zebor lo echad, right? Reuven chooses one and Shimon chooses one. And echad mehem omer, eini yoshev im zeh, if one of them says, this gets back to the point that you were raising before, Jerry, if one of them says, oh, I'm Reuven's judge, but I'm not going to sit with Shimon's judge, he says, ein lachosh al kach, that's not going to be a problem. You don't have to be concerned about that. The leka kisufa, you're not embarrassing the other person. Dakati lo iskavi dina, because you haven't really established the basin yet. When it's just a theoretical thing, and one person is choosing X and the other person is choosing Y, and they're going through the entire process of zebor lo echad, then you don't have to be concerned that you're going to be embarrassed the other person, because it hasn't really become a basin kavua yet. You only have to worry about embarrassing the other person when the first two judges are chosen and the third one has not been chosen yet. Now, just one interesting point. This is a side point. The Chidushe Haran in source 8 actually has two deos as to whether, and this also goes back to what you were saying before, Jerry, has two deos as to whether or not you need to know who the second judge is, right? It's very clear, the Gemara says, that the judges need to know who the third judge is, who they are going to be sitting with. Do I need to know who the second judge is? If I'm appointed by Reuven, do I have to ask Reuven, all right, who's Shimon appointing? So the Ran says in source 8, Ikaman de Amr de Lav Davka Kishaborin about Ladinan as a Shlishi who devinan das a Shnayim me a basin Hanav Rarim. There are those who say that it's not only when they choose the third Dayan that you need the consent of the first two. Ela afilu kishazebor lo Dayan echad, beinan daito kishayivror haacher as a Dayan hasheni. Vinodia lo kol echad beechad ploni yihya imach bedin sheyaskimu shneyam rasalom hadayanam bekach. Some say that even when Reuven appoints me, I have to ask him, who is Shimon appointing? So that even for the first one, I have to know who he is, against the assumption of the Bach. And the Ran quotes the second day, V'ikaman de'amar, t'davka k'shashnei ha-ba'alei dinin borin es ha-shlishi hu d'v'inan da'shnei ha-dayanin, mishum kisuva de'shlishi im lo yirtu ha-shnayim lodun ima. There are others that maintain that it's only the third judge who you need to know about in advance because of potential embarrassment. Aval k'zeb Kazebir lo echad, bezebir lo echad, ain't zarech to as hashnayim. Sheim lo yaskim ha echad, lo dunim ha acher chaveru, less like yisuba lachad tfei mechavre. Because it's only a one-on-one, nobody's going to be embarrassed. He gives a slightly different twist from the Bach. The Bach was saying, oh, it's only when the basin is established that it's embarrassing. The Ran is saying, when two people disqualify you, it's like a two-on-one, that's embarrassing. If one guy disqualifies you, okay, so it's a personal issue that you guys have that you need to work out. That's not particularly embarrassing, but when two people are against you, that is embarrassing. So, but the Ran does have one day that maintains that you have to know who the other Baal Din is as well. Now, I'm just going to point out, going back to our very first sugya, and this is, I preface this by saying this is not what the Ran seems to be saying, but if I wanted to take the two positions of the Ran and make them slightly more conceptual or fundamental rather than the technical embarrassment concerns that the Ran is dealing with, remember our first question was, what is the nature of Beis Din Shel Zavla? Is it that all three of them are together on a Beis Din, like every regular Beis Din? Or that the first two are in some way, I'm not going to say lawyers, but some way representatives of their respective sides, and the third one is really the one who's Machriya Beinei. And we saw the different formulations of the Aramah, the Rush, and in Rashi, and Tosfos, we saw all the different formulations. Now, you could have said that the question of whether or not you need approval for the second one could have hinged on that original issue as well. If they're all about Dayanim who are sitting together on the Beis Din, then yeah, perhaps they would need approval because they are indeed Dayanim who are sitting together. If they are coming in as adversaries and representatives of the two respective litigants, then I don't need to approve of the other guy. I'm not sitting with him on a Beis Din in a true sense. We're actually supposed to be adversarial. So if I reject him, that's not really embarrassing. We're expecting a kind of adversarial relationship between the two Dayanim, and there would be a problem. I would have loved for the Ran to have put it in those terms.
I actually thought maybe the Bach could have been saying this, although I don't think that that's like the straightforward way.
Yeah, again,
but like when he says in lachlush alkach delakeh yisufa dekati loyd kavayedina, like why not? Like just because we're not a finalized Beit Din, and I can still say like I hate this guy. I don't want to be on
right.
Beit Din.
Right.
You can't because like. It doesn't matter what you think of that guy because
right exactly what we were saying when we were analyzing right when we were analyzing that first sugya of Zavla. It's certainly in the Ran. The Ran is saying it's a 2-on-1 versus a 1-on-1 issue. So for the Ran, it's definitely a technical embarrassment issue. But it would have been nice. I haven't seen anybody who explicates this idea, but I think it very much could have linked to the Lamdos on that first sugya. So let's just review and highlight what we're going to talk about next time. So we saw this halacha of Rav Yehuda Marav, inein tofos malashan l'mkir demichos mimahem, the application to our Mishnah about the sitting on a Beis Din with and the consent of the first two Dayanim in the third Dayan, and the quotation about the Nekiyah Hadasha b'Yerushalayim. We saw a question from the Gemara in Gittin, which says that specifically by a get, they need to sign together, not by other shtaros. And the Rishonim resolved that in two ways, either by saying, look, Rav Yehuda Marav is a true halacha, but we're concerned that something may go wrong. Either he'll neglect his obligation according to the Rush, or something will go wrong in the execution according to the Ran. The first day in the Ran, that was one option, it is a halacha. Option number two is, no, it's not a halacha at all. It's just an Eitz HaTova, it's a kind of Midas Chasidus, that's reflected by the Nekiyah HaDa'asha B'Yerushalayim. So is it a halacha or is it an Eitz HaTova? Then we saw that machlokas is probably manifested in the way you view this halacha. For Rashi, it's a concern that you are going to be embarrassed. That screams Eitz HaTova, right? Despite the fact that If you read Rashi in certain ways, we said it could have been a halacha. Rashi, simple implications, definitely is a tova. Whereas if you look at the Bach, it's a halacha about embarrassing the other person. And then finally we saw the two deos in the Chiddush Aranus, whether it applies to the second judge as well or only the third. Now, for next time, what we have to analyze is as follows. The Rambam quotes this halacha in two different places. He quotes it in Sanhedrin Perek Beis, and he quotes it again in Sanhedrin Perek Chaf Beis. It's always interesting when the Rambam quotes things in two places. We always try to pay attention to where the Rambam places things. Location is important in the Rambam. The Rambam tried to... His goal in writing Mishnah Torah was to create some kind of conceptual organization of the entire corpus of Torah Shebaal Peh. So it's going to be important to know where the Rambam places things. It's always important to pay attention to that. Agav, I think they have, in the Met right now, they have a manuscript in the Rambam's own hand. So they say, if you look at the Rambam's own manuscripts and his writings, he's constantly crossing things out, writing things over again. He edited the Mishnah Torah many times. The exhibit's only open until January 8th, which is this Sunday. So I plan on going. I plan on going this Sunday. That gives me chills just to think about it. But, so we have to think about why the Rambam quotes it in two different places, A. B, there are about five or six nuanced differences between the way the Rambam quotes it in these two places. And these differences make their way into the Shulchan Aruch as well. And they bother many of the Achronim. Because there seem to be some kind of, it's not explicit, but implicit contradictions between the Rambam in Sanhedrin Perek Beis and the Rambam in Sanhedrin Perek Chaf Beis. There seem to be some contradictions between Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat Siman Zayin, Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat Siman Gimel. The Achronim discuss it, and hopefully we'll try to develop an approach for what the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are trying to indicate to us about this halacha next time. Shkoyach.